Marion, you're working in economics, and it's also connected to conservation and the environment. How do you put the two together?
So I guess economists are most generally interested in how people would use and value the environment and natural resources in general. And so that would include how companies make decisions about resource extraction or how they use land and water, to things as abstract as the links between biodiversity and human health, or ecosystems and things like flood protection and climate change. So economists in general are interested in understanding the human values around that and then the behaviors, interactions with the environment. So I work particularly in my area on understanding how people make decisions about resource development, and in particular, how they might internalize the environmental impacts of their decisions, including how the decision-making process itself that involves public regulatory agencies like the Alberta Energy Regulator might affect those decisions. So this would include things like how companies might account for their carbon or greenhouse gas emissions. So they might shadow cost that in their decision processes, trying to maintain their social license. So for example, we know that in the oil sands that how they deal with greenhouse gas has been a big issue in terms of getting social license and the resource to market. But the same could be true for other things like biodiversity or water use that have some kind of direct value to them. And then secondly, the area that I work on is this interface between the regulatory process. So it could be land use planning or developing watershed plans, and how to coordinate all of the individual decisions that are going on around natural resources and on the landscape in order to make sure that we're maintaining our environmental assets.
So just to think about what's happening in the news today, there's all this concern about carbon taxes or tradable permits for carbon. How would you then take those things and apply them to conservation?
So I guess one of the things that we've been looking at is how to price impacts to ecosystems or environmental risk so that companies and individuals internalize those costs in their own behaviors. And so carbon tax is just a way for consumers to recognize, for example, the effect of their decisions, like driving through gas charge on the environment. And similarly, with tradable permits, then large companies, large final emitters, can trade pollutants. And in the same way, they're accounting for the cost of those pollutants in their decision making. So for some of the things that you might not have heard about, we might use offsets for biodiversity, again, is another way to incorporate the impact of decisions on biodiversity into decision making for companies or for water trading. So to recognize that when you are using water, that other users have a value for that water. And in being able to trade that water right, then that gives you the financial incentive to recognize those other uses.
So I've been speaking with some of your colleagues about ecosystem services. How would you define ecosystem services?
Ecosystem services were defined under the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment as the human benefits derived from ecosystems. And these would be things like clean water for drinking, watering your garden, water for livestock. So for example, forest and wetland ecosystems provide clean water. They help to reduce overland flooding and pulses of nutrients and sediments into our rivers. And that can lead to costly cleanup, whether through water treatment or overland flooding can also heighten the impact of flood conditions. And so riparian areas and wetlands help to protect our infrastructure. They help to protect assets like fish stocks. Forests have been called in the U.S. the nation's largest water company.
How do you encourage people to actually put value on these environmental services?
So we've been looking at design of market-based instruments. So these could be taxes, or they could be offsets or tradable rights, and using those to send signals to companies about the value of the environment in their decisions. So an example would be about a diversity offset, where a company would mitigate the impacts of its development by paying, for example, a landowner to restore some habitat for species at risk. Another example would be tradable development rights. So municipalities can use those to encourage developers of high-rises or malls, things like that, to offset the impacts of those developments by paying landowners or purchasing credits from them for not subdividing their properties. So there's all sorts of different ways that you can design incentives to get the land kinds of landscapes that we might want to see. The problem is that if we just approach this one environmental outcome at a time, for example, looking only at carbon or looking only at biodiversity, we can end up with the same kinds of problems that we have in just responding to prices for other commodities such as crops. So we know that in some ways, if we just focus on reducing greenhouse gas emissions, that there can be other unanticipated environmental impacts. So we could be planting trees and reducing the water table. So we want to have a system that integrates all of these different interactions between ecosystem functions like hydrologic function, water purification, and look at that as a system together. So we've been working on something called clearinghouse in exchange, where we want to see if we can develop metrics for all of the different ecological impacts that could occur from different land management decisions. And then within a computerized platform, send signals back to all the land users about the collective impact of their decisions on all of these different functions. And so this is the main thing that we've been working on, is can we develop this kind of a clearinghouse for ecological information that then sends scarcity signals back to individual companies or land users, and then linked that to what we call an exchange. But the exchange would then be a place where companies can trade environmental risks. So they might pay each other to reduce deforestation or to set aside area for caribou habitat. And so we want to develop a system that looks at all of those different ecological impacts together so that we can take advantage of synergies, we can reduce costs for companies, and make sure that we are not ending up with unanticipated consequences by just focusing on single environmental outputs like carbon.
So essentially, what you're trying to do is build up a lot of information that people have access to, so that these things will help in their decision making when they're looking at the environmental costs. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we work with all sorts of academics and research organizations that collect data on everything from water to biodiversity. And what we want to do is take all of these strands of research and put them into some kind of platform that would be used for decision making in Alberta. And, you know, that could serve as a model actually for decision making in other jurisdictions as well. So not many jurisdictions have been successful at addressing the cumulative effects of decisions and integrating between all of these different services. So that's one of the things that the innovation system would like to support. And hopefully that would lead to a restoration economy in Alberta, where we're focused more on making sure that we're putting back what we're taking out of the environment and safeguarding our resources for future generations.
What do you see as being some of the challenges or obstacles that you face as you're trying to pull this clearinghouse together?
So the first thing is you're in an area of what I would call still high uncertainty. So we don't completely understand the relationship, for example, between how a farmer uses their land and water quality, or on the health of wetlands. And so there's a lot of science that still needs to be explored in relation to the effects of individual decisions and behaviors or beneficial practices on downstream outcomes, like reduced flood risk for the city of Calgary from having upstream riparian areas. And so that's one of the challenges. And the second challenge is that it is confusing for people, because when you start integrating all of these different ecological impacts, there's complex interactions. Whatever models are used have to be transparent, and in order to get the buy-in. So there's a bit of a trade-off between transparency and the complexity of the functions that get put in. On the other hand, you know, we deal with complex systems all the time in other areas. And so I think that it's just, we haven't dealt with the complexity in environmental decision-making. And so I think it's sort of a hurdle that we'll have to get over.
What would you do differently then?
So if we wanted to think about ecosystem services as a more holistic approach to understanding all of these benefits that ecosystems provide. And so focusing on maintaining healthy ecosystems and services rather than particular benefits like carbon sequestration, and ensuring that ecological limits get incorporated back into decision making. So making sure that they get respected within the collective decision-making process, either through setting prices that make sure that we stay under those thresholds, and then providing what I call the infrastructure to send that information back to people that are interacting with the environment. So we're looking at developing markets for ecosystem services and ways for individuals, company, even the public to interact with those markets.
It seems so complex and complicated right now. How would you even sell business on this? How would you make a business case?
So right now, companies already spend a lot of money on reducing their environmental impacts. However, we don't really understand collectively how all of the investments that they're making in the environment are contributing to sustainability. So the piece that's missing is finding some ways to aggregate all of that information so that we ensure that the money that is being spent on the environment, first of all, is sufficient to ensure sustainability. And secondly, to make sure that we invest in the highest value areas so that we minimize the costs of protecting the environment, and we don't just throw money out the door in ineffective ways, but make sure that all the money that we're spending delivers. So the whole point around having this clearinghouse in exchange is so that all of the companies can interact in a single platform, and by sharing information, be able to pool their investments in a way that's going to generate what I would hope would be the biggest bang for the buck in terms of environmental protection. And also, this clearinghouse is going to look at all of the different ecosystem services holistically and not just one at a time. And the beauty of it is that we also have land trusts, we have governments buying environmental services. So whether they're paying farmers to reduce nutrient inputs, or whether it's a land trust that's purchasing land for habitat protection, and also organizations like the North American Waterfowl Management Program. And they spend millions of dollars on watershed protection, wetland protection. So can we not take all of those investments and somehow pool them together so that we're not just having a scattered approach to investing in the environment, but it's much more targeted and strategic, and we'll make sure that we're staying under these limits that we want to respect.
I was reading through your project proposal, and the title is The Development of Information and Science to Support the Provision of Ecosystem Services on Agricultural Lands. Now, I understand that this pilot project is down in southern Alberta near Pincher Creek at the Indian Farm Creek. Just tell me about that. Describe the area.
So one of the interesting things is that the South Saskatchewan Regional Plan identifies opportunities for agricultural producers to supply ecosystem services on their lands. But in order for them to do that, we need some kind of strong science base to help everybody understand the impacts of different management practices on water quality, biodiversity, and all of that. So there's an organization or a group called the Agri-Environmental Partnership of Alberta, and they have identified ecosystem services as one of the areas where they would like to better understand opportunities for agriculture. So our objective in this project was to develop and test some integrated science and decision support tools for the evaluation of BMPs. So these are beneficial management practices on things like biodiversity and water quality and quantity. So a BMP would be something like nutrient management. So those would be practices like soil testing to make sure that you're applying your nutrients at the optimal time, or keeping cattle out of the creek by fencing, doing conservation tillage, so leaving residue on the fields, reducing overland runoff, things like that. And then the other part of the project is looking at what would be the opportunities for producers to actually receive payments for undertaking these practices, which are a cost to them. And so if society benefits water quality improvements, then is there some way to transfer those benefits back to producers? In order for society to be willing to pay, they need to know that there's a credible credit at the end. And so in developing this science base, we're hoping that we can encourage market development. So by increasing the certainty that consumers would be receiving different environmental benefits, so water quality benefits or reduced risk to species at risk.
So essentially, what you're trying to do is answer the question for both the farmer and for society at large as to, well, if I have to change what I do and it's going to cost me money, what's in it for me?
Yes. And the other thing that we're interested in is actually how farmers make decisions, because the cost to producers, it's not only the cost of changing a practice today, but if you want them to do something like put in or restore native prairie habitat, and you want them to make sure that they don't destroy that habitat over a period of 20 to 30 years, then we want to understand the effect of that decision on the whole farm management system. So will that lead to intensification of the way they lose lands on other parts of the farm and actually kind of offset or dampen some of those benefits? What are the effects on their business risk management strategies? So does that reduce the option values on their land and how they might want to use it in the future? And would they require additional compensation then to keep habitat intact for long periods of time relative to short periods of time? And then this ties back to, once we understand what the farmers would need to be compensated to participate in these markets, again, they would also be participating in this exchange and clearinghouse. We would be incorporating their behaviors and information, the lengths of contracts, the different management actions that are in place or contracted to be in place in the future, and then looking at that over time and making sure that we are within the phosphorus limits that we want, or making sure that we have our critical habitat levels, not just today, but in the future.
So this pilot project that you have, where is it located, and what's the area like? What's happening down there?
So the project area is a site called Indian Farm Creek, and it's in the Foothills Fescue Natural Subregion of the province. And it's quite a small watershed, about 14,000 hectares. It's just close to Flethbridge and, as you said, Pincher Creek. And the reason that we picked this watershed is that Alberta Agriculture and Forestry have done some studies in the past that were funded by the Alberta Livestock and Meat Association. And so we actually have a history of experimental data on the impact of a suite of beneficial management practices on water quality and phosphorus loading. through that project, Alberta Agriculture and Forests, they were able to develop some relationships with producers. So we thought that we could take advantage of that and then build out from that pilot project later on.
How much farming goes on down there?
So the area is primarily used for mixed agriculture. So there's about 37% of the land in annual crop, 55% in perennial crop for feeding livestock, hay and pasture. There's around 2,500 head of cattle and then some dairy and beef feedlots. And so it's ideal for us because we have a mixed farming where we've got outputs in terms of nutrients from manure and they're being applied to crops. And so it's going to help us understand the whole life cycle of nutrient management and manure management strategies.
Well, when you add up all those crops, it sounds like almost all the land is dedicated to agriculture and there isn't anything left for natural habitat.
That's correct. There's only about 2% of the areas left in natural area. And most of this is in the upper watershed due to its higher elevation. So it's really important, actually, that because there's so little natural area left, that we incorporate management practices that are going to protect biodiversity and these other functions through how we produce our crops. And so that's really what we're trying to understand. We can't achieve all of it from protecting natural area. We have to look at how we're actually using the land for crop production and try to generate better ecosystem service values out of commodity production.
So how are you going about this down there? I understand that you have a number of master's and doctor's students involved.
So we're working with the University of Guelph, and they are developing a platform that's called IMWebs. And that platform is going to integrate all of the different ecosystem services that we're looking at. So we're looking at water quality, water quantity, carbon, and biodiversity for this pilot project. So we have a postdoc at University of Guelph as well as a master's student. And we have a master's student at the University of Alberta who's looking at the economic cost to producers of adopting some of these BMPs. And we're going to have some students that will be developing a choice experiment or some kind of survey instrument to evaluate what the public is willing to pay for these ecosystem services. And so that's also at the University of Alberta. And we're working with Alberta Biodiversity Monitoring Institute to look at the impact of these BMPs on biodiversity. So,
and BMPs again?
Beneficial management practices.
What stage are you at now?
So the project's just finishing its first year, and this year we spent most of the time getting up and running, starting to communicate with the landowners and get access to their information, and we're hoping to hold some workshops in the watershed in the spring and fall, and I guess get a better understanding of what the issues are so that we can work with them more closely over the next 2 years of the project to identify real opportunities for them to participate in ecosystem service markets.
So aside from the economic aspect of things, do you see this area as being one where there could be some restoration beyond agriculture?
We know that the prairie grasslands have been one of the most affected areas for species at risk. And so we're hoping that along with some of the water quality work to do some restoration of natural grassland areas as part of being paid for a whole suite of benefits that that would provide. Right now, what we're just trying to understand is the contribution of natural grasslands to all of the ecological benefits, and then where would be the areas to most strategically reinvest.
I know that you're basically in the beginning stages of this project, but looking down the road, how do you think it might be applied in other areas?
So we could take the same model and we could develop it across all the watersheds in Alberta. So not just for agricultural lands, but we can look at the same types of decisions and practices for forest companies, for oil and gas companies. And so providing the same sets of information, finding the best way to integrate the costs or the investments that companies are making in mitigating environmental impacts across forest and agricultural lands. So we think that by piloting this platform in one region, we'd be able to then roll it out to different regions across the province, in agricultural areas, but also on our forested lands.
Having gone through all this, what do you see then as being the take-home messages for people?
So from our perspective, the key messages around business case to support innovation in markets for ecosystem services. It's really that the economic and environmental dimensions of societal well-being are integral to each other and entwined. And so we know that the non-market benefits of ecosystem services in Alberta are high. There has been studies done on the value of pollination, fish habitat, and these add up to millions of dollars per year. We also know that there's lots of industry interest in the supply chain and retail. For example, we've got the McDonald's and Unilever's and Walmart's all interested in investing in ecosystem services and working with landowners. But they need to have some kind of decision support to help understand the benefits of those decisions. And we know that the Auditor General is asking our government agencies to demonstrate better the benefits of their decisions to the public. And so we think that these kinds of decision support tools can help provide the transparency and credibility of decision-making and investment around the environment, and that the markets are going to leverage these conservation resources and show accountable results. So if we can scale up these programs instead of having pilots here and there and ad hoc investments, we could actually move towards more of a restoration economy that I think could provide jobs and lead to the kinds of diversification, you know, maybe not in a big way, but at least at the margins be significant and maintain rural employment, where we know that industries like the outfitted hunting industry provide a lot of value to local business. And those industries depend on healthy ecosystems. So at the end of the day, that's what our investments are trying to demonstrate.
And I would think, too, that we've talked for over 30 years about sustainability, but it's still basically a word. And what you're doing with applying the economics here is essentially putting the meat on the bones. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, so our goal is to actually say, what do we mean by sustainability? What are the values around our ecosystems? And then let's bring those values into decisions instead of just talking about them. And we're not going to get everything right, and markets don't account for all of the different values that we have. But if we keep ignoring it, then we're just going to continue to experience declining ecological health and increasing our risk. So we need to do something about it, and this, I think, is a step in the right direction.
Thank you very much, Marion.
Well, thank you.